are back. We have, let me see, we have Simone Mendez on the line with us, and she is telling us a fantastic story. And incidentally, ladies and gentlemen, I have before me all the documents that Simone have sent out, documents from the U.S. Department of Justice, Freedom of Information Act requests from the FBI, the Air Force. I mean, this story is genuine. This is the real thing. And we're going to be talking more about it as soon as we come back from this commercial. Okay, we're back. And Darren, I can't go anymore without hearing my half-hour break music, because we've been missing that all night long. And I don't know about everybody else, but I miss it. So before we go any further, I want to hear the music.
Legends were born surrounding mysterious lights, seen in the sky flashing.
Okay, we're back. Isn't that great music, Simone?
Right.
Well, we usually play that at the half hour, and we have some new stuff in here that we're doing this evening. So I guess both Darren and I both spaced it out, but we're back on track. Okay, now you're down there sitting in an office, a tiny little office on a hard wooden chair with an FBI agent who's grilling you, and he's accusing you of being a spy.
What he did was gave me a document. And, by the way, I do have this document now thanks to the Freedom of Information Act. I thought I would never see this thing. But when he gave it to me, it's called a Statement of Suspect. And it said, I, and then there's a blank space, and you put your name and acknowledge that I am being accused of, and then they type in there, espionage against the United States.
Was this special agent a fellow by the name of Weller?
No, that was not his name.
Okay.
I know his name, but I better not say it on the air, because, Privacy Act, I want to protect his identity.
Okay.
Then he told me that they're going to investigate me for possibly spying for the Soviet Union is the reason for their investigation.
Now, this is back in the days when Ronald Reagan, President Reagan, was still classifying the USSR as the evil empire. I mean, we have to keep all this in perspective, right?
It was at the height of the Cold War, I think.
Right, and they had just invaded Afghanistan a year or so before, so things were still pretty tense.
Mm-hmm. They were very much the enemy that time. And so I was officially a Soviet spy. For the next 6 months, I would undergo interrogations, polygraph examinations. But I would like to back up and get back to the interrogation the very first night, because this was the weirdest of all. I think they grilled me for like about 6 hours or so on various things, and then after that, we had to go over to my apartment where they would proceed to search it and just turn it completely upside down, because they were worried and scared that this so-called meaningless, worthless piece of paper was made copies of and distributed. They were, you know, make sense out of that. I can't. They're still scared that copies were made and distributed.
Did they ever mention the contents of what was on the telex? Did the subject of unidentified flying objects ever arise?
Yeah, it did.
Did the FBI even know what was on this thing?
Yeah, because he had it. It was his in his possession.
Well, who fished it out of the burn bag?
I don't know. There's a lot of stuff that went on that I can...
Because I remember you saying that you threw it in the classified trash burn bag.
And from there, I just have no idea. You know, there was a lot of things that happened, but behind my back, that I will never in my life be able to answer, as, you know, things that changed hands and so forth, because I wasn't there.
Did they incarcerate you?
No, they didn't. Interestingly, they never incarcerated me, but I was always being interrogated and polygraphed for 6 months.
Did you still continue with official Air Force duties?
They transferred me. They took me out of that job and just had me do odd jobs, like assist in paperwork filing at the office, anything that odds and ends that needed to be done that wasn't secret or anything. But
did you get an attorney in the meantime?
No, I was too frightened and intimidated, and I was my state of mind at that time.
Well, how old were you then, Simone?
I was 21.
And this was in about January of 1982?
21 or 22, January. Well, the investigation started in January of 82, yeah.
Okay.
And my birthday is September, so.
Now, did you have anybody that you could discuss this with? Any friends that, you know, had a friendly shoulder? Did you take it to the base chaplain? I mean, were you the only person that knew what this was all about? What about your former buddy Green? What happened to him?
He was out of my picture mostly. I don't know what was going on with him. All I know is that they were interrogating him too, but, you know, they kept all that from me. And when the investigation finally ended, I asked what happened to him, and I was told, you don't have a need to know. That was the exact quote. But during this time, during the investigation, like on my first night after those 6 hours that they were questioning me, they brought me over to the base hospital after they searched my apartment. After they searched my apartment, then we drove over, and they put me in a room in the base hospital, and I didn't know why. They said it, because we didn't want you to be by yourself alone at your apartment, so we want you to be here. And why not a barracks room? I don't know, unless they thought I was going to try and escape and go AWOL or something.
Or perhaps they were afraid that you might be contemplating suicide?
It could have been, because I was extremely distressed. I mean,
well, Simone, in looking at it in hindsight right now, is there anything that you can think of where the authorities may have exceeded what the law would allow? Were you threatened by you know, were any threats made to you that would be considered beyond the pale, beyond what the law would allow? Were there any innuendos made that you could be injured or harmed or, you know, anything like that?
No, I would like to say that even though the agents were relentless in this investigation, they were professional and mostly courteous to me at all times. And I think they were I don't want to give anyone the impression that they were really mean to me and tortured me and that, because they didn't, but some very bizarre things went on, like when they took me over to the hospital.
All right, let's take a telephone call. We have David on line one from Venice. Good evening, David. What's on your mind?
Good evening, Don. I got a question for your guest. Is she still in the Air Force?
No.
Okay, has any government official or FBI or anybody like that ever come to you to tell you, you know, to keep your mouth shut? Or
to me?
No, to your guest.
Oh, Simone?
After the investigation was over, they told me that they didn't want me talking about this to anyone.
Could you speak up just a little, Simone? It sounds like you're fading out.
Okay.
Oh, that's better.
After the investigation was over, they told me they didn't want me talking about this to anyone, but I am vocal about it now because, one, I'm no longer in the service, and two, I disagree with the government policy. If ETs are real and they're here, I disagree with that. I don't think there is any good reason in this world why the government knows better and we don't. You know what I mean? It's like, who are they to say, well, the American public is more emotionally unstable than we are, so we can handle the reality and they can't.
Well,
that's
wrong. What was it, Simone, that finally was the final straw that you decided that you just couldn't live with this anymore? I mean, you got a pretty bum rap from all this. You know, in an ideal world, of course, this wouldn't happen, but it did. And it had to be. I mean, you were a young woman at that time. You were only 20, 21 years old. There was nobody you could really talk to that you could trust, that you could depend upon to give you good advice. So you kind of had to grin and bear it. But what was it that made you decide you were finally not going to grin and bear it anymore? This is it. You're going to go public.
Well, I was going to put this whole thing behind me when I re-enlisted.
You re-enlisted?
Could I love that pain, don't you? Could I go into a little bit of detail? Because something bizarre happened after the investigation was over.
Sure, absolutely.
I mean, I'm going to answer your question, but there's some very strange things. When they took me out of that, after the investigation was over, they let me continue to stay in, which was a surprise. I did not get so much as a letter of reprimand, no punishment whatsoever. I mean, I thought I was going to be executed and go to jail for the rest of my life, and instead nothing happened to me at all, except they put me in an unclassified career field called the services career field, and I was like a hotel desk clerk. Well, In 1984, I think it was, or 83, there was a big counterintelligence conference, and I was just doing my regular duties, and the head of counterintelligence in Washington, D.C., him and his subordinates lavished me with these letters of appreciation about what an outstanding, fantastic job I was doing, and I have these, you know, and that was really strange. Then they even let me re-enlist and stay in, and I got another base assignment. I was stateside the whole time. Now, when I got to my next base, it's 1985, and my attitude is I'm going to put all that other stuff behind me. I don't know why they gave me these lavishing letters of appreciation, but I'm going to be proud of them and just forget about all that other stuff.
I'm looking at them right here, incidentally, Simone.
And instead, what happened was a civilian who is now an ex-friend of mine, a civilian who was indirectly involved in this, I don't know why, I can't explain it to you, and I never will be able to explain this to you, but he turned against me literally overnight. I'll never know why he did this. I can't explain it. It's bizarre. I don't know what went on in his mind, but he decided to overnight, literally, to just turn against me. This was in 1985, and get me in trouble with my story, and I don't know why. And what happened was he somehow let my story get out to Omni Magazine. A reporter from Omni Magazine called me at the base and started just questioning me. He didn't even introduce himself properly, and it scared me. And it scared me really bad, and I told him I can't do a story with you because I'm still active duty and I'll get in trouble all over again. So he seemed to agree, okay, we won't. Then a period of time went by, and we're talking 1986 now, and I'm going to take leave and go home to visit my family because my brother is getting married, and so I took vacation for 2 weeks. And when I arrived home, my brother said that the base had been trying to call me all day long. And I thought, what did we do, go to war? I mean, it only had to be that kind of emergency because what else is going on? So I called them back. It was about 11 o'clock at night. And the first thing they said to me was warning me of my national security oath and the penalties for the violation thereof. And this scared me. I didn't know what was going on. I was really confused. I was scared. And I asked him, what is going on? And he wouldn't tell me. The lieutenant would not explain. All he would say was, and this is a quote, this is exactly what he said, you better keep your mouth shut about that UFO message. And I asked him, what in the name of God is going on that this would come up? And I wondered if it had to do with, it did have to do with Omni, because he said, what is the name of, I want the name of this reporter who's trying to contact you from Omni. And I thought that was all over with. And so I gave him the guy's name. And then that's all he wanted. So
somebody obviously was monitoring your telephone calls.
I don't know what was going on. It was very strange. So for 2 weeks, I was just completely distressed, thinking that something awful was going to happen to me when I went back to the base.
Okay, we're going to have to stop and take a break. David, I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, it does.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, I got a quick question for you. I wonder, when is your magazine coming out?
Just went to bed a few days ago. And if the good Lord is willing and the river doesn't rise, we should maybe have it back by the end of the week.
Okay.
Okay, David, thank you. Keep those eyes to the skies.
All right.
Okay, Simone, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back, and let me tell you about a new goodie that's going to be coming out. Boy, that will open your eyes. Okay, Simone, we are back.
Yes.
And I bet you most people don't know that you're probably one of the most attractive women in UFOs today. I can't believe that nobody's not calling you to talk to you tonight.
I'm surprised, Don Ecker. I would like to throw this in, and it's going to be off the subject, and it's going to be related to what you have just said right now.
Am I going to be embarrassed?
I don't think so, no.
Okay.
I would like to say that I have gotten an extremely negative reaction from a lot of people who are supposed to be what class calls pro-ufologists. I have another story that would probably be for another show about how I have been treated by pro-UFO people. And men too. I'm surprised, you know.
Well, you just haven't been hanging out with the right UFO crowd, Simone.
I have been the object of a lot of some vicious jealousy. I think that people are very jealous, and you know, I know there was one particular individual who met me once at a MUFON conference and was circulating letters to researchers saying that I was trying to enjoy all the attention from my story. And the bizarre thing is that I have been shunned. It seems like people, you know, other than you and Barry Greenwood and Mosley are the only ones who are not afraid of me, who are not afraid of my story. And I don't know what is wrong with everyone else, but you know, their treatment of me, the FBI's treatment of me pales in comparison to how I have been reacted to by the pro-UFO community.
Well, you know, Simone, speaking about that, and this is a heck of a good place to pop in here. In the last 5 or 6 years, the majority of research in the UFO field, in my opinion, has been greatly degraded by people that call themselves professional researchers. The petty jealousies, the backbiting. I mean, you know, this is a heck of a thing to talk about on a live nationwide UFO show. But unfortunately, and I don't agree with Whitley Strieber on too many things, but several years ago when he dropped out of the UFO field, he said in a public letter written to members of his communion group all over the United States.
I saw that letter.
UFO people are some of the craziest,
meanest, nastiest, craziest people I have ever encountered.
Exactly.
And when I read that, I said, amen. you know, I have been reacted to with fear. And I mean, it seems like a lot of researchers, the paranoia aspect of UFOs and government and stuff is, I think, deep down it's fun for them, like the movie Jurassic Park. But when it's real, when it's no longer armchair, when it's an obvious real case like mine, where you don't have fantasy and hearsay involved.
But you have a federal officer standing there with a badge threatening you with
yes,
violation of the espionage laws.
Then the whole attitude just changes.
Well, you know, that's where the old cliche, the old saying, you separate the men from the boys,
mm-hmm,
or the girls from the women, you know.
And one thing I've greatly admired about you and Vicky is that that I have not seen this done with any other UFO publications or too many other ones, is that you guys, you go after the directly to intelligence people, you know, intelligence community people in the subject, and it seems like a lot of people are afraid of that, or they like to have their own little fantasy that, you know, they're being monitored by the government when they really aren't. I mean, we can't even get Fidel Castro, nevertheless, you know, Joe Blow that lives down the street who thinks the CIA is monitoring him through his cereal bowl or something, you know.
Well, you know, Simone, we still believe at UFO Magazine that the American people are the government. And, you know, Thomas Jefferson, and golly, I wish I had the quote in front of me here, but I'm just going to have to paraphrase. No, I'm sorry, not Jefferson. I meant to say Abraham Lincoln. I'm going to have to paraphrase him. But he said, regardless of the circumstances, the American public or the American people will do well if you just keep the people informed. Never think that they're too childish or stupid to understand what the real problems are. And that's a paraphrase. I mean, those are not his exact words. But that's something that since at least World War II, there has been in the bureaucracy a mindset that has come over the bureaucracy that they are sitting in a very elite position. The American people are nothing more than sheep, and they don't have the brains themselves to lead, so they're going to have to be led. And things like the UFO phenomenon, which is only the tip of the iceberg, is just paramount that people understand that this is just one of many areas where this mindset has been allowed to take hold. And it really behooves people to understand what the real points and objectives should be to understand where they're being led. Because, you know, today we live in a very dangerous world. With the stroke of a pen, the government, the president, can wipe out the Constitution, enact the national security law, and we could be living under martial law, and most people don't even realize that.
Right, we may be under a lot of that already, and people don't know it. I have a theory, and I hope I don't get you in trouble. I don't think I will, but I know that I'll probably be attacked after this, but I cannot sit on this view. I have to express this openly because I'm so frustrated. I have to say that I don't know what you would think of this theory, but I suspect that certain elements of the UFO community could be counterintelligence.
Oh, I don't suspect it. I'm almost assured of it.
Because I was told by some eminent pro-UFO people that, quote, you better shut up. I can't remember the exact words, but I was warned and told that I better not talk about my story when I'm at their meetings. I better not come out with my story, or maybe you should listen to so-and-so.
Well, that's fine, Simone. We'll do it right here on CRN.
And I will not be silenced. You know, they have behaved more like silencers than the government agents who investigated me. And well, so I have a theory that if there's so much for UFO truth, why are they telling me to keep quiet and not come out with my story?
Well, while everybody ponders on that, do you feel like taking another phone call?
Sure.
Okay, we've got Ron from Medford, Oregon, hanging patiently on line 4. Good evening, Ron.
Hello, Simone.
Yes.
I just have a question or a theory on your story, and what if the Air Force or whatever had suspected this green person of espionage or whatever, and they passed this document on him and say it was a fake document, and then just followed around to see where it went. What kind of validity do you have on it not being some kind of a fake or a plan?
I'm open. You know, I'm very open to different kinds of theories as to what happened. I'm not trying to say that I saw proof of ETs. I'm not going to say that at all. But it was a UFO document, therefore it makes it a UFO-related story, and there's the possibility that it could have been real because of the way they treated the thing, the way they acted about it, or it could have been some kind of counterintelligence operation, and they thought they wouldn't. Why would they involve UFOs? I don't know exactly, because there are some very high-level people. In the intelligence community that have an interest in UFOs, and they don't get set up and played games with, so why did they do it to us? And all I can say is I don't know. I'm going to be one of the very few people in the subject nowadays who is able to say I don't know instead of I have the answer. Listen here. So that's where I'm coming from.
Is that pretty well answered for you, Ron?
Yeah, I just wondered, you got the documents yourself, Don. Validity. I mean, this seems like something that you could do. I mean, putting a UFO thing out there would be fairly easy to track if you're trying to find somebody that was, you thought was passing.
Well,
documents.
Vicki and I
follow and see where they go and all kind of good stuff.
Vicki and I at the magazine have had a suspicion for quite a while, Ron, that the intelligence community would consider the UFO informational arena to be just a prime training ground. You know what I'm saying? To go in and play mind games with a lot of these people. The paranoia level is just unbelievable among many researchers. We encounter that all the time. And the fringe element has really grown beyond all bounds. And this would be a great place to go in and play games. I mean, the way the rumor mill works in this is almost beyond belief. It takes off like a light shot, and before you know it, this thing has grown and has changed content, and it's wonderful.
The only other thing I got is the document is true, and they stumbled on something that's the vital importance. The thing to check out would be the vital importance is that the NORAD or the United States government has the ability to even track things coming in and out of the solar system. You're talking a large, vast amount of space between the, you know, you can't just go on a flat plane. You got to go on a vertical, horizontal, and a, you know, all around a global.
Oh, that's absolutely correct.
If
yes.
If they could do that, that would be the immense big story, I would think.
But remember now, in the last number of years, within the last, let's say, 10 years, Ron, NASA has carried out probably better than 30 Department of Defense classified missions with satellites. And we have the Hubble up there, too.
Yeah.
So there's no telling how many of those satellites, and I've heard rumors that there are a lot of them pointed outward, as well as a lot of them pointed inward. So,
which makes you wonder what they'd be looking for in anyway.
Exactly. Exactly.
What to look for, and maybe, you know, who's telling them where to look.
Amen. There it is.
Okay, Don. Thank you. Good show.
Well, thank you,
keep
Ron.
Up the good work.
How's your brother doing?
Oh, great.
Okay, you guys, I'm glad to hear you guys are tuning in every week.
Oh, yeah, I got my other radio hooked up for you now.
Okay.
So they don't have it on the TV, so.
Have you been telling the folks up there how they can get the show?
Yeah, we got a little cable vision. They run a little advertisement on the cable channel. They usually carry the show, except that on weekends they always carry Prime Sports Network stuff, and they've been advertising your show. Look like they took stuff for verbatim. I sent them a letter to the person that runs TCI Cable out here, and they've got advertising, you know, UFOs Tonight every Sunday night, hosted by you, Don Ecker, and looks like they took that on my letter. So.
Well, you know, one of the telephone companies upstate in San Francisco, which is Pacific Bell, I believe, have been running information about the show in their commercial, although they have not named the program itself UFOs Tonight. They said America's only national radio talk show on the subject of UFOs.
Well, that's not me. I didn't write Pacific Bell. I didn't think of it. But I've written everybody else. I even wrote Fox. They told me how to put redo sightings into UFO Tonight.
Okay, producers, if you're listening, did you hear this man? Did you hear what he said?
Yeah.
America wants to know. Inquiring minds
UFOs
want to know.
UFOs Tonight. Huh? I think the networks can stand a couple or you know, half hour on at least television a week. With the stuff they spend time on.
Well, we'll keep...
I keep trying.
We'll keep broadcasting until they either carry us away or cancel us, Ron.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm still working on ideas, so...
Take care, my
keep
friend.
Good work.
You bet.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, Simone, we are going to have to take a break. We are about 4 minutes past the break time. We got to take our half-hour break. And, Darren, don't forget the music. Here we go.
See...
Legends were born surrounding mysterious lights seen in the sky.
And we are back, and I have with me, joining me live tonight on the telephone, Simone Mendez, former member of the United States Air Force, a telecommunications specialist that held a top secret clearance. Inadvertently, through no fault initially of her own, she got her hands on an official Air Force telex, a carbon copy that discussed NORAD tracking UFOs coming in from deep space and going into orbit around the Earth, then going down over the Soviet Union. We're talking about 1981. And later, some of these objects went back out into orbit, and from what Simone remembers, this message detailed them traveling in excess of Mach 25. If you have a question for my guest this evening, or a question for myself, and you'd like to ask it, you can call us, and we're going to be on for just about another 20 minutes before we've got to lock up and go home. You can reach me by calling area code 818-352. Are you guys all asleep out there tonight? Are you watching that trashy network television? Come on, get on the phone, give us a call. Let's keep this thing moving. Okay, Simone. When did the FBI finally decide that you were not James Bond and say, you can go home?
That was in the investigation officially ended in June of 1982. So from January to June, pretty much. And
did you ever get your security clearance back?
No, I was told that I could never have one again as long as I live.
Is that right? Uh-huh. Well, it's kind of funny, though. I mean, let's let all the dirty laundry hang out. Didn't they try to coerce you into becoming an informant for the OSI?
Yes. Now, this was later on when I we got off on the story about how I went to my next base and I was going to put this all behind me, and then a civilian friend surfaced and made the story public to Omni, and it got me in a lot of trouble. And then, and I think all I can do is theorize, this must have attracted the attention of the OSI at my new base, because in 1987, and it seems like for 8 years, something kept going on for eight long years, because every year something surfaced new.
Okay, I'm sorry, you were saying?
In 87, the OSI contacted my supervisor where I was working and saying they wanted to see me, and I couldn't believe, I thought, now what? It seems like every year something was happening.
And this is after you re-enlisted?
Yeah, after I re-enlisted. This was in 1987. And it seems like every year from that point in 81, something was happening that stemmed from this UFO incident in 82.
Okay, let's take some more phone calls. We have, waiting for us on line one, Jason in North Hollywood. Good evening, Jason.
Hi, how y'all doing tonight?
Okay, do you have a question?
I actually have a question for you or anyone else that might be listening. I'd like to know, what can you or anyone tell me about the Pleiadians and what's going on with Billy Myers?
Okay, the Billy Meyer case goes back to the early 1970s. We could do an entire month of shows, Jason, on the Billy Meyer material. However, I have to be honest, I have not done an in-depth investigation into a lot of the material. However, I have done an investigation into some people that have taken an in-depth look at some of the photographs. I have a lot of questions about a lot of this information. A lot of it appears to be channeled. A lot of it appears to be the result of very possibly an intelligence disinformation operation. This is something that you know, in a minute or two, we just simply don't have enough time to go into it in any depth. However, there are a number of people that are very familiar with the Meyer material in this area, and I fully intend to do a show on it with them at some point in the future. Keep listening.
I don't quite follow what you just said, that you feel some of it's not correct.
I feel that a lot of it is a result of an intelligence disinformation operation. There have been many questions and many points raised. Basically, what we are dealing with now, and this is my opinion only, this entire Meyer situation has developed into almost a religious-type cult. And the only people that appear to be able to get next to Billy are people with a lot of money, people like Japanese television crews.
I happened to recently see a video through a friend where they had time code on the film of some of the actual 8mm stuff that he filmed.
Everything Billy does these days, from what I understand from some very good sources, he wants a nice fat check to do it. And if they're going to pay for it, you know, more power to them. I just have a lot of questions about the overall case. Look, we got to go, Jason. I got a lot of other calls, but thank you for yours.
Thank you very much, too.
Keep your eyes to the skies.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
We are going to line two. We have Dennis in Glendora. Good evening, Dennis.
Denise.
Oh, I'm sorry, Denise.
That's okay.
I misread it. By golly, you can slap me when you see me.
My phone's full of static, so I can't hardly hear you, so I'll just ask a question for Simone real quick, and then I'll hang up so I can hear you.
Go ahead.
Okay, I just wanted to know if, since her experience, if she's run into any other military people who have had similar experiences or close to it.
Did you hear that, Simone?
Yeah. You mean after I left the Air Force, who've had similar experiences?
She said, did you hang up, Denise? Evidently, she hung up. Her question was, Simone, since you had your experience, and later on, after you got out of the Air Force, have you encountered anybody with similar problems?
The only military people, I guess, you might that I met since I've been out who were involved in government UFO cover-up were people I saw when I went to UFO conferences who were either speakers or just, you know, there to listen to speakers, but I didn't really talk to.
But no former military personnel that had a similar situation like yours?
No. Researcher Barry Greenwood, who's one of the most respected, eminent researchers in this field right now, has noted that my case is the most unique one he's ever come across. It's extremely unique.
And very well documented, I might add.
Yeah, it's documented up the nose. And so we're just kind of taken aback that there's a lot of disinterest in it.
Well, you know, that's one of the problems with radio. I mean, let's face it, radio is television of the mind. But that doesn't help when I could hold up these documents and show everybody exactly what has transpired. They're unfortunately unable to see it. Well, let's take another phone call. We have Pat out in Lancaster waiting patiently on line four. Good evening, Pat.
How are you tonight? Good show.
Thank you.
As to the lady that called in from Temecula?
Yes.
I believe what she was seeing was Mars and Regulus out there, and that's about it.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, they're in lined up. They're about 2 degrees apart, and they'll hang around for quite a while.
Well, that's great, Pat.
And they will... Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, they will attempt appear to change their, being lined up as it circles around the... celestial sphere.
Are you an amateur astronomer?
Yes, I am.
Oh, fantastic.
And also, she said Venus was up. That's actually Jupiter. Venus is in the morning sky, so...
Right.
Don't want to blow her out of the water, but unfortunately, she just probably was sitting out there.
Well, you know, that's one thing about it, Pat. We're all here, hopefully, to learn. And, you know, I certainly appreciate your knowledge and your expertise coming on the air.
Oh, no problem. Also, could you possibly give your number out a little more frequently?
Oh, absolutely.
Because, you know, you said no one's calling. It's because I forgot what the number was.
Well, evidently, you didn't hear me at the beginning of the show.
Yeah, I did.
You
I didn't
keep
write
that pencil
it down.
Handy.
I didn't write it down, yeah.
Okay, for all you folks out there that were not able to catch the number, if you're in the 818-213 or 310 area codes. Now, I do this live all the time, Pat.
I know.
I mean,
you.
This is not a tape, so this is live.
I know.
I've got this down, Pat. We have a telephone number that you can call, 818-225. And if the 2225 number, the 800 number, is busy, you can still get in on the 818 number. So, thanks, Pat, for your call.
Can I say one more thing?
Yeah.
Real quick. I've been an amateur astronomer for now for about 8 years, and I have never seen anything in the sky I couldn't identify. I believe they're out there, but I haven't seen them. And I probably look at the sky a lot more than the average person. So just, you know, if you see some kind of strange object in the sky, you know, unless it's really close, it's probably a star or a satellite.
Well, you know,
more
than
likely.
One thing that we always stress, and whenever I speak, I stress.
Yeah, I know, you told her to get the information on it. Yeah.
UFO means unidentified object.
That's right.
It does not mean spaceship, and unfortunately, many people make that jump.
That's true.
When they hear UFO. When we're talking about UFOs, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about things that cannot be identified, at least initially. 90% of the cases usually end up being identified. We still have that hardcore 5-10% that seemingly defy description. Look, Pat, got to run.
Okay,
got the lines lit up.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, we are going to John in Tahunga. On King Cable. Good evening, John.
Hi, Don. How are you doing?
I'm just fine. Thank you.
Good. I'd like to ask Simone if she's been out to, as a civilian, been out to Area 51.
No.
You have not?
No.
Do you think it suggests it would be a good or bad idea to go out there?
I would love to visit and see what all these people are seeing in video taping, but I live very far away from there. I'm living in the Midwest, and I just can't, for financial and time reasons, I can't afford to go back out there. So I would like to. Maybe someday I will.
Yes, and Don?
Yes, sir.
I'd like to tell Pat that after the lady in Temecula had talked about what she had saw, I went up on my roof, and I was looking towards the Big Dipper, and I did see an object shoot from there towards the south. It wasn't a commercial airline, and I don't know, it might have been a satellite. It wasn't a shooting star, because all Friday night it was out in the hill.
Do you know how badly I want to go outside and take a look right now, and I'm stuck in the studio?
Yeah, but just right after she had said that, I went up, and I'm in Tahunga, right, near your office there.
Right.
I spent all Friday night up on the hill above you, which is, the altitude is like 4,000 feet. And I didn't see, I saw maybe a couple helicopters and a couple commercial airlines and two shooting stars, but I saw nothing at all Friday night till 3 o'clock. But I did go up on my roof, and I saw something that, as you say, you really can't identify, and it was going too fast for a commercial airline. And it looked very strange. And just leave it as that.
Well, now you know why I always say keep your eyes to the skies, right, John?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And I'll see you tomorrow.
Okay, my friend, you take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, we are going to Greg in Van Nuys. Good evening, Greg.
Hello, Donna. Hello, Simone. Simone, I'd really like to know what happened. Were you discharged? Did you leave voluntarily? And what are you doing now?
After my second four-year enlistment, when my contract was getting ready
to end. I can hardly hear you.
Can you speak up a little, Simone, please?
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
I voluntarily decided to leave, you know, not to re-enlist after my second four-year term was up. But the OSI wanted me to stay in so I could continue working for them. But I didn't. I voluntarily left. And on my record of service, I have an honorable discharge with an excellent re-enlistment code and the Good Conduct Medal and Don's Oakley Cluster.
And what are you doing now?
I'd rather not say if
okay,
that's right.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. I understand that. Okay, well, thank you very much. And once again, Don, great program.
Well, thank you, Greg. I hope you're telling your friends to tune in on Sunday nights.
Oh, yeah, I even sent a tape to my sister on the East Coast.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Where's she live at?
Long Island.
Oh, up in New York.
Yeah.
Okay, super. Well, you know my home state is Pennsylvania.
Huh, okay.
I'm originally from Central Western.
Oh, all right.
And I've been trying to get some people back there to get interested in picking the program up.
Sure. Well,
you know, local hometown boy.
Yeah.
You know, almost makes good. Okay, we got to run along. I'm going to try to get the rest of
all right, thanks again,
these
John.
Callers. You betcha. Bye-bye. Okay, we are going to Jim in Playa del Rey. Good evening, Jim.
Good evening, Don. I'm back in the wine country.
Hey, all right.
And I've been listening, get this, on hold to my cable company.
Uh-huh.
I called them up and had them put me on hold so I could get the show.
No
they
kidding.
They were nice enough to let me listen for about 40 minutes. And
they have it. They have the show on their hold button on the telephone, but not on the TV.
Right.
Now, how do you figure that?
I can't. But I can see that I've missed the better part of a very good show. Simone, I'm sorry people haven't been calling, but I'll give you a quick question. Don had mentioned the documentation of your case. Is any of this published anywhere?
It came out in the Just Cause newsletter, which you can get from the Just Cause people, and Larry Fawcett, is the one that you'd write to, or you could write directly to Barry Greenwood, the UFO researchers.
And I have, incidentally, all that information at the office.
That's what I wanted to hear. Okay, because it really, I'm shocked that there hasn't been more interest in a case like
yeah,
this.
Yeah, I have been reacted to whenever I come out with this story. It seems like extreme disinterest, and Barry said that it's the most documented and significant case he's ever come across, and so we're baffled, really.
I mean, MJ-12 gets all kinds of press, and something like this, which sounds like it has some real potential, is getting kind of pushed by the wayside. That
well, we're not letting it get pushed there, Jim.
That's for sure. That's for sure. All right, well, I won't take any more time. Don, I'll give you a call tomorrow, and I'll have a little delivery for you sometime soon.
Hey, all right.
A liquid refreshment.
You guys take care. Hey,
yeah.
Jim, I hope you had a safe trip.
It was a wonderful trip, but I kept my eyes to the sky, and all I saw was a couple of shooting stars. So I sound disappointed. I am, believe me.
Okay, pal.
All right, thanks
we'll
a lot.
We'll talk to you later.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay, we have Ron in Garden Grove. Good evening, Ron.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
I was wondering how many more years do you think the government can sit on this stuff and expect to get away with it?
Well, is that a question to Simone or myself
for
or
either,
both of us?
For either.
Well, Simone, what do you think?
You know, they have the power, and it's my view is that if ETs are here, I agree with Whitley Strieber that they are the instigators of the secrecy even more than the government is. And I'm wondering, Don, what you think of that. If ETs are here, they're operating covertly. They're stealing our physical resources.
Well, you know, the last time, I think it was the last time or perhaps the time before when I was on Larry King Live, I had King ask me near the end of the program, well, Don, when are they going to land on the White House lawn and make themselves known? Well, Larry, when they're damn good and ready, you know.
Exactly.
There's not a bloody thing that we can do about it. Whatever is happening with whatever, you know, is behind it, They're working on their agenda, not ours.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree with that, Simone?
I agree totally. Yeah.
So is that 10 years, 50 years? Or
well, you know, it's been over 50. Well, actually, I mean, let's get real. It's been thousands of years. This is not a new phenomenon.
That's what I mean. I don't see how it's possible for them to cover up this well or this much.
Well, it's not that it's covered up. I mean, we know that there is a real phenomenon. Now, what we really are in the dark about is the extent of knowledge that people within the military and intelligence communities may have about the phenomenon and what information they are concealing, i.e. either from crashed wrecks, you know, from objects that came down, or perhaps even, as some of the rumors speculate, bodies that have been found. So, here's what I think, the bottom line. Unless something happens that is so overwhelming that it cannot be hidden any longer, the only way that our government will acknowledge this is if they are forced to be drugged kicking and screaming into the sunlight and they have nowhere else to go.
Okay.
And as long as they don't have to do that, then things are going to continue the way they are. And that's it. Yep.
There it is, bottom line.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, Ron. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, Simone, we have just roughly 2 more minutes, give or take, of airtime left. What are your plans now? Are you still publicly speaking about this case? Do you have any plans to write a paper or perhaps even a book on this case? What are your plans?
I feel, would the word be stonewalled? I feel like I'm up against the wall. I feel stuck right now, like maybe it's all been futile because, you know, the things that I've told you after I got out of the service, the way I was reacted to, and the public reaction. See, my last word, I'd like my last word on the show to be that nowadays it seems like the public wants sensation. It's a known fact that people are much less educated now than they used to be, and the level of people's intellectual education is going way, way down in this country to the point of almost like a third world mentality. So people are going to be much more superstitious and religious and disinterested in hard facts, hard data, hard documentation. And they want the sex and the rock and roll. They want the sex with the aliens. They don't want military documentation. They want sensation, food for the imagination and the fantasy. And my story doesn't really provide that. It's more of a blue book era style type of story, I think. And I think that is very, very sad.
Well, you know, one of the highlights that I think transpired over 30 years ago in the days of people like Donald Kehoe, whom I had great respect for, among others, these people were able to document that, in fact, this phenomenon was interacting with the military in a number of different ways, radar intercepts, pursuits.
But people don't want to hear that. They want to hear about all these bizarre, strange little things that, you know, I mean, I guess I would have more success getting on TV if I, you know, told about my dreams, I think.
Juiced up the story a little bit?
Oh, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
I said, in other words, if you juiced your story up a little bit.
Because a film crew from the program Sightings came out to my town and spent a whole day with me interviewing me, and my show never got on the air, and I saw a lot of other people I knew with less substantive things that did get on the air, like, you know, abductions and dreams and stuff. And they spent a whole day with me back in January of January the 20th.
Oh, Simone, hang on a second. Somebody's waving at me.
We're out of time. Thanks very much. Hope you enjoyed this edition of Don Ecker Live.
Yep, Larry King, telling us it's all over but the shouting. Did you recognize his voice?
Yeah.
Do you know how I got that?
No. You were on his show.
Yeah, remind me to tell you about that later.
All right.
Okay. Simone, I want to thank you for joining us this evening on UFOs Tonight. This is definitely something that I want to do again. Will you consider coming back?
Yes, I would like to.
Okay, fantastic. Why don't you hang on the line for just a moment? Let me wrap things up here. Once again, thank you, and we want to have you back soon. Okay?
Okay.
Okay. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that is it for another week. My name is Don Ecker. The show is UFOs Tonight. You are listening to the Cable Radio Network. Tonight's show was brought to you by The Ufologist, a new publication out of Palatka, Florida, that has some of the funniest and most insightful information presently available. You can find out more about The Ufologist by giving them a call at area code 904. Please tell them you heard about them here on UFOs Tonight. Next week, my guest is going to be a gentleman by the name of Lars Hansen. If you have been listening to the show for any length of time, you'll remember the last show he did with us. Hansen is an investigative reporter, and what he has to talk about next week goes beyond the idea of just UFOs, right into the very murky world of intelligence operations and huge disinformation schemes. Look, keep your eyes to the skies. We'll be back in a week. And hey, remember this, we love you.